We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And now New Galaxy Broadcasting presents Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition, a program addressing the grave challenges to human and citizen rights in America and the rest of the world. How can we, the people of Earth, take back the power and privileges granted to us by God and address so significantly in the Declaration of Independence? Our rights are inalienable, that is, given by God and incapable of being taken away from or given by another. These rights are the basis of liberty, the foundation of all life and happiness. The Coalition of Planetary Empowerment is an organization designed to give its members tools and information to empower them personally, in relationships and in business and employment, but also to give them a voice and the ability to help transform political and corporate governance to support the true needs and desires of people throughout the world. Inalienable and Free focuses on the need for government and corporate business interests to be responsive to the will and desire of their constituents and consumer shareholders. My name is Johnny Bluestar. I'm host of Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition, with my co-host, Hugo Rodier, MD, and together we're going to probe into events surrounding the troubled world of Syria. Last Sunday, there was an Israeli attack on Syrian missile targets again. Did you find this totally a surprise, Hugo?
No, not at all, not at all. When we hear our president, Mr. Trump, threatening strikes after of some kind, he didn't specify, after the alleged gas chemical attacks. Right. So we knew something was coming, so he just decided to seek his junkyard dog, Israel, on Syria. I don't have any proof, but smells like he just had, Mr. Trump, had Israel do his dirty work for him.
It's a very complex situation, but there have been many, many attacks by Israel on Syria, and these are basically on, I believe, defensive weaponry. And we'll go into more or less this kind of coordination you're speaking about. Frequently, there's been a lot of discussion in the courts of the weight of pre-electoral comments by Trump on various policies of restricting immigration from Muslim countries. Do these comments, his pre-election comments, have any weight in measuring the motivation of these restrictive policies? The Supreme Court was looking at that. Can you judge his actions by what some people would call pre-election campaign jibber-jabber as to what his intentions really were? In other words, were his policies based on discrimination or truly for the security that they were postured as? If that kind of question is relevant about immigration, what do you think of these comments about Syria, Hugo? Here's a clip of Donald Trump's pre-presidential comments on Syria and 16.
Donald Trump sat down with Bill O'Reilly for a hilarious interview about his presidential run, and he said something already disqualifying on the issue of foreign policy.
But this is like the lightning round here. You just tell me how you're going to solve these problems. ISIS. How are you going to defeat ISIS?
I would hit them so hard. I would find our proper general. I would find the Patton or the MacArthur. I would hit them so hard your head would spin. Now remember, and I sent you the document, I said in 04 we should not go in and do that whole thing with Iraq. It was a disaster. Because I said that Iran will take over and it'll totally destabilize the Middle East. But there's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am.
Are you telling me you're going to send American ground troops into Syria?
I'm not telling you anything. And the reason I'm not is because if I run and I win, I don't want them to know the game plan.
Okay.
Let me just say
something. But you have to, if you want to hit them hard,
I'm probably going to have to say something. I have a way that would be very effective with respect to ISIS. But when I watch Obama get up and talk about in 2 weeks we're doing this and in 3 weeks we're doing that.
Put American ground troops in to chase them around?
Take back the oil. Once you go over and take back that oil, they have nothing.
But how do you take
it back? Right, you have to go in. You have to go
with
in.
With ground troops?
Well, you bomb the hell out of them, and then you encircle it, and then you go in, and you let Mobil go in, and you let our great oil companies go in. Right. Once you take that oil, they have nothing left.
This is just amazing.
Well, you know, you got to give him something. You got to give him transparency. And so,
yes, he gets an A plus.
Right. So now we know exactly what's behind every rhetoric statement. I believe that what he said before totally applies today. It doesn't matter how much he might try to sugarcoat things or have Israel do
things. I think that's true of a lot of things, right? That's what you're saying, like the immigration issue.
Exactly. I mean, and I'm the wrong person to ask because I'm an immigrant myself, a legal immigrant, I must add. I came in as a student and then became a citizen. But no, I think that Mr. Trump is a total racist and bigot. Did I say that plainly?
Yeah.
I did? All right.
And I think the... there's another side to it, though, which I see as being rather interesting as well, is he's got a tremendous number of followers who are evangelists. And I understand from listening to the news today that the polls are showing that white evangelist women are losing a little bit of their flavor for Trumpism. But nonetheless, it seems awfully strange that he's siding with bedfellows that are bigots, but he's also signing up with people whose religious beliefs seem to be rather in stark contrast to his actual behavior.
Well, it has to give us pause when these people, the evangelists, mm-hmm. believe in a rapture, which is a way of saying that we're going to go and wage war in the Middle East, and then Earth will go to hell, and then the good people, them, will go to heaven, and the rest of us will die. You know, so I don't believe in any of that, and I hope they're not serious about it. But yeah,
well, there's a similar Armageddon view of some of the extremists, particularly in Iran, about, you know, that somehow something that happening to Israel would spark in the coming of the next imam. So right. It's kind of strange. It seems like there's a lot of Armageddon stories, even in cultures that are completely different in their view of reality, or at least in conflict with each other. So it's hard to piece all these things together.
Right.
Trump's... Secretary of State now is very much of a sort of an evangelical, and he has been said to have started when he was in the head of the CIA, Pompeo. He had various, I guess, spiritual discussion groups about the Bible in the CIA headquarters, which made some people uncomfortable.
I've seen a news clip of Pompeo talking to evangelists from a pulpit, talking about the rapture. And mm-hmm. I hope he's not serious. I hope he was just there getting their vote, their favor, you know, sucking up to them. Because if he's serious, we're in deep doo-doo.
Yeah, there's the fear that some people who believe in this, and I'm sure, Hugo, there's different varieties of that belief. But there is definitely one which says that all this catering to Israel is a preliminary to its destruction, not necessarily by these people, but by virtue of prophecy, which is a frightening thing. But right. Speaking of frightening things, let's just tune in for a second on Israeli attack on Iranian-based, Syrian bases that we were speaking of in N-17.
It's the Real News Network. I'm Sharmini Peres coming to you from Baltimore. The Israeli military attacked several bases in Hama and Aleppo countryside on Sunday. Israel is becoming notorious for their weekly attacks on Syria, targeting Syrian government forces that are backed by Iranian and Hezbollah forces. Israel has previously hit Iranian-backed militia outposts in Syria, mainly targeting arms convoys of the Lebanese Shia group Hezbollah. Israel regards the group, which is fighting alongside President Bashar al-Assad, as the biggest threat on its borders. Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, reported that some 200 missiles were destroyed and 11 Iranians were killed in the process, which Iran denies at this time. In the meantime, Netanyahu has been granted war powers authority in extreme situations by the Knesset, with only the defense minister's approval. This in spite of the fact that the Joint Committee of Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, as well as the Constitution, Law and Justice Committee, all rejected Netanyahu's request for such powers. On to discuss all of this with me is Larry Wilkerson. Colonel Wilkerson is former Chief of Staff to the Secretary of State, Colin Powell, and now a distinguished professor at the College of William and Mary. Thank you so much for joining me, Larry.
Good to be here.
Larry, what is the purpose on the part of Israel pursuing this kind of aggression in Syria, antagonizing Iran at a time when this war is actually coming to a closure?
Israel does not want it to come to a conclusion. Israel sees, as do the neoconservatives in this country and some others allied with them, like Richard Cheney, they see this chaos in the Middle East as conducive to their security. Not only as conducive to their security, but also as sort of allowing them to do their full greater Zionist strategy, which is to get as much territory as they can, as fast as they can, to include the water in that territory, which is becoming a rather critical issue for the entire region, but for Israel, certainly.
Well, we're seeing something really strange here. Because Israel has changed its definition of the authority that would permit them to go to war. In most democratic countries like ours, the authority to wage war is supposed to go towards the legislature, which in aggregate is more representative of the people. In our country, despite the fact that that power is clearly vested in the Congress, only Congress is supposed to declare war, as the Constitution says, this authority is being more than ever given to the president, who's attacked Syria twice with the justification that the use of chemical weapons is a red line, which Obama originally said, giving the U.S. the right to attack. Now in Israel, although the Knesset can declare war, that's their Congress, that right is also vested in Prime Minister Netanyahu and his Secretary of Defense. So two people besides the Knesset could declare war under certain circumstances. You take out the restrictions in the American Constitution when it comes to declaring war, and what is happening, is that when that restriction fades out, and in other so-called democratic countries like Israel, we have a real challenge because we're giving the keys to possibly even thermonuclear war to just a handful of people. Where do you think, Hugo?
Well, I think this is just another show of a fascist mentality that is playing in Israel and in the United States. But, you know, this is what we see throughout history. It's nothing new. When countries become wealthy and well-to-do, they have money control a lot of their decisions, and that's a definition of fascism, when governments are in bed with corporations. And so to give all the power to a couple of people to declare war, to maintain that corporate view of life and government, that is, keep the machineries of capitalism and war making going and humming, well, it makes perfect sense to see that only a few people are going to make the decisions that will keep that keep them on the warpath. Great clip you played there. Israel does not want peace. Neither does the United States.
Yeah, Wilkerson, who was saying that, was the chief of staff of Colin Powell, and I think he felt, and I'm sure Colin Powell felt, very sorry about their collaboration, maybe not completely intentional, with the so-called intelligence that was provided that got us into the Iraqi war. Let me remind you, folks, this is a talk show. Our number is 1-888-429-5471. Please keep your questions and comments connected to the theme of this show, which is, will the fire in the sky light up the whole world? The drums of war, Syria, Israel, and Iran. Again, the number is 1-888-429-5471. Please keep your questions and comments connected to the theme of the show, as I said. Now, here's a message about how we at New Galaxy help our clients create profiles, followed by a clip of a truly poignant song by Zave Nathan and Bonnie Blazak. That's C9 and M9. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. One of the most important positioning strategies in this world of social media is the profile. This could be, of course, a profile on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, speaking of the most popular. But profiles are also used in personal and business websites, prospectuses, brochures, authors' bios for books and publisher presentations, on record albums, and film investment presentations. We've been involved in these kinds of content and we'll be happy to help you put your best foot forward. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. Living in the Closet tells the story of a lot of us who suddenly became aware of these harsh political challenges we are facing. By Bonnie and Zave. Hugo, for me, I have to admit, even though I was proactive in many ways, politically interested, I was living in a closet. And at one point, I kind of woke up. Was there a moment like that for you, or were you always engaged?
No, I bought everything I read in the papers, hook, line, and sinker, about what political landscape was like. And no, one has to dig. You know, it's hidden. The real agendas are hidden. And it was a huge disappointment. I think it began with Watergate for most of us people our age, when mm-hmm. we began to see, you know, hey, wait a minute. We're not being told what's going on here. And of course, going back to the Kennedy assassination, if you start to dig as to what may have happened there, you start to put two and two together and you begin to see that we're being lied to, and only those who bother to dig are able to see what's in not clearly. It's still fuzzy.
Sure, but, of course, it's still hidden.
Yeah, but we're making an effort, you know, and we might be wrong, but you know the general theme that we no longer live in a democracy but a plutocracy, an oligarchy, is pretty true. Okay, as to the details, we might not have them right, in my opinion.
Well, for me, it was like I was brought up in a sort of what you call a liberal household, and all those things that you mentioned, I mean, Watergate and everything, the Kennedy assassination, all these things were definitely questions for me. But what really changed my, I thought these were like certain groups, certain criminal elements, you might say, sort of restricted criminal elements. But after the 9/11, I started to question things. And I started to realize that we were in deeper, dirtier water than I had thought. And speaking of all that lack of clarity and suddenly realizing something seems strange, I want to talk about and present a little bit about the what Prime Minister Netanyahu is up against now. He's trying to get rid of the current Iranian deal with the United States and other countries. That's coming up very fast. I believe May 12th, the president is supposed to decide whether he's going to sign in that they've kept their promises and the sanctions will continue to be removed or try to back out of it. And shortly following the last attack by Israel, Netanyahu gave a very public announcement of alleged proof that Iran had violated its agreement with the U.S. and other countries to stop their efforts at obtaining nuclear weapons. Let's listen to it. N18.
הערב אנחנו נציג לעולם מידע שלא נחשף אף פעם.
Tonight we will present the world never before exposed information, and it's an intelligent achievement one of the biggest Israel has known. As I'd like the international community will hear what I have to say and understand it. And I will talk in English and afterwards in Hebrew.
Good evening. Tonight we're going to show you something that the world has never seen before. Tonight we are going to reveal new and conclusive proof of the secret nuclear weapons program that Iran has been hiding for years from the international community in its secret atomic archive. We're going to show you Iran's secret nuclear files. You may well know that Iran's leaders repeatedly deny ever pursuing nuclear weapons. You can listen to Iran's Supreme Leader, Ali Khamenei.
I stress that the Islamic Republic has never been after nuclear weapons.
You can listen to Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani.
Nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction have no place in Iran's security and defense doctrine and contradict our fundamental religious and ethical convictions.
This is repeated by Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif.
We didn't have any program to develop nuclear weapons. Anyway, we consider nuclear weapons both irrational as well as immoral.
Well, tonight I'm here to tell you one thing. Iran lied. Big time. After signing the nuclear deal in 2015, Iran intensified its efforts to hide its secret nuclear files.
Well, that is very interesting, that last thing he said, because it's talking about hiding the files. Most countries, we all knew that they were lying at a certain point because that's why we moved in on being more aggressive. Most countries seemingly disagreed with this alleged proof of Netanyahu's for a variety of reasons. Let's listen to some comments on that in 19.
He gave this speech just after Israel's military bombardment of Iran-supported Syrian military installations, reportedly killing 11 Iranians, an unknown number of Syrians, while destroying 200 ground-to-ground missiles. Netanyahu's attempt to present what he called evidence of a secret Iranian nuclear weapons program was obviously coordinated with the U.S., and Donald Trump complied accordingly.
What Israel has done today with the news conference and Prime Minister Netanyahu just gave a very, I don't know if everybody's seen it, but I got to see a little bit of it. And that is just not an acceptable situation. And I've been saying that's happening. They're not sitting back idly. They're setting off missiles, which they say are for television purposes. I don't think so. So we'll see what happens. I'm not telling you what I'm doing, but a lot of people think they know.
These escalation tactics are coming from Israel at a time when Donald Trump is expected to render a decision on if the U.S. will continue to waive the sanctions against Iran on May 12th. In response to the Netanyahu talk, the Nobel Peace Prize-winning International Atomic Energy Agency, known as the IAEA, the body that is in place to monitor Iran's compliance with NPT and the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, which is the agreement that often people refer to as the Iran nuclear agreement. Now, in relation to Netanyahu's talk, the agency issued a statement saying that the agency had no credible indication of activities in Iran relevant to the development of a nuclear explosive device after 2009. And it said that it is based on the Director General's report.
So, Hugo, what do you think of that? I mean, that's a very big thing. This is the big secret cachet of stuff. And then most of the countries are saying, maybe not. Trump is saying, oh, we're supporting Israel. I don't know. He's saying it so assuredly that he's going to not sign that agreement to continue the removal of the sanctions. But what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure about this, okay? I don't have any proof, but I think they're all lying, all of them, Israel and Iran. Look, when you're at war, you're going to try to get the biggest dick you can find. And so, of course, Iran is trying to get an atomic bomb. And, wouldn't you, if you're at war and you're living... Right.
Well, I wouldn't if these sanctions were crippling us and that there was adequate inspection. I would probably not do that.
It's like saying that
Saddam Hussein would continue his weapons of mass destruction after he was restricted, and he complied. So I think it's an iffy thing. I don't think it's, you know, I think that these restrictions on Iran's economy really was hurting them, and they were compelled to stop.
We'll That's see. Just, I just think that both sides are lying, so it's hard for me to believe any
one of them. Both sides are definitely going to be willing to lie. They've lied in the past. They've lied, you know. But whether they're doing it in this specific situation, I don't know. But I tend to think that. That Trump has been going at this since the campaign, wanting to get out of this deal. But do I hear specifics about it? No, I have never heard any specifics from him about why he wants to get out of the deal, except it's the worst deal that ever existed. So,
well, I think everyone will end up with an atomic bomb if we don't destroy ourselves first.
Well, we're definitely, it might be that North Korea won't. North Korea is going to have to give up their stuff. And I would say that if North Korea does give up, they're going to be giving up under the most well-organized surveillance by various parties, including the United States, South Korea, and probably China. So we'll see. I always hope for the best, though. I want to say something that I am amazed at what has happened in North Korea. Don't you think that this, I think Kim has gone much further than you would have expected him to go and faster.
Well,
his attitude seems to have changed. Do you think there's any reality to it?
Yes. In fact, we talked about this months ago and I told you what I thought. And I told you this was all grandstanding to equalize, to bring some equality to the table. And from day one, I felt that Kim Jong-un is not that stupid. He just wants to get to the table on equal footing. You're not going to have a discussion with anybody if you're not being respected. So he has wanted Trump to pay attention to him, the world to be a bit afraid of him, so he can come to the table. And so I felt that the whole thing from day one was just posturing, saber rattling, just so that he would feel powerful and respected enough to have a voice at the table. If you get up to a table with a giant and you're a little midget, what kind of discussion are you going to have? So, no, I'm sorry. It's not surprising to me. Now, he might be lying. He might be doing this and that. I don't care. The fact that they're at the table talking is, to me, the most salient thing.
Well, I think he's done his approach under these circumstances has been most extraordinary. I mean, like the Olympic Games and all the festivities, and then reaching out for some true aspects of unification, bringing families, making arrangements that families would meet again. I mean, it seems like he went an extra distance. That's what I'm saying.
I think you're right.
I think you're right that he would have to go a distance if he's going to survive.
Well,
but on the other hand, he did a little. There's a spirit of generosity there that I thought was surprising.
I thought it was so candid for Kim to admit that maybe we shouldn't meet in North Korea because the roads are so bad, and and so, you know, I'm sorry, but I just think that we don't hear the truth. And to me, the truth was that this guy was just trying to scare people so he'd have some respect and talk face to face with an equal power, or at least in psychological terms.
Yeah. Well, in certain ways, your prediction seems to have come true, right?
Oh, I don't know.
I just think it came true in a little bit more dramatic and bigger way. I mean, you know, they just adjusted their clocks, so their clocks in South and North Korea are the same.
Yeah.
You know, the little things like that, you know, they're crossing over, you know, he's crossing over into South Korea, and the guy says, well, I can't wait to cross over to North Korea. He says, oh, come on. He crosses over, takes a step in. Anyway, we're going to go take a break now. And I'm going to hear about a book that I've worked on about the fall, incidentally, a science fiction version of the fall. Not your ordinary book, I would say, about that subject, and something about our mission at New Galaxy Enterprises.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
By God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
Hey, I just want everyone out there to know that this is a talk radio show now. It wasn't when we started, but it is now. And if you're interested in sharing your comments about the whole Syrian experience that we're having and the attack on Israel and, I mean, the attack by Israel and the possibility of some problems with that, with Iran and all this other stuff, just give us a call at 1-888-429-5471. We want to hear your opinion. 1-888-429-5471. So, you know, in our last program, we talked about alleged false flags in the chemical attacks on civilians in Syria, whereas it's hard to prove things at this distance about whether or not both of those recent incidents involve U.S. retribution for Assad's so-called use of these weapons. It's not hard to see a rush to attack these facilities before getting the approval of Congress, before vetting the reality of the accusations in the Security Council and creating a real investigation. Our job as citizens is apparently to believe whatever U.S. military agencies say about the infraction. So this is going back to this idea that there's everything is sort of hidden. We're given information by different agencies or by out of our country, like from Netanyahu, saying certain things. And do we really have the capacity to get the full proof that we need as citizens? And how could we do that? Hugo?
Well, I think you just have to make an effort to listen to alternative media, read alternative books. It's not going to come easy. And the sad reality is that most people don't care. And the elite, you know, the ones in power, know this. In fact, they have a lot of contempt for people in general. And they think because they're rich and powerful that they're better. And so, you know, you can see how it all develops, and it's a historical fact throughout history. We're no different.
Well, I think, getting back to the actual attacks that are going on in Syria by Israel, do you think it could lead to nuclear war?
Well, geez, yes, it could. You know, the possibility is there, but I'm hoping that even these the people in control realize that that's a no-win scenario for everyone. And so hopefully self-preservation wins out and the big boys realize that we mustn't go there. But, you know, I question their sanity from time to time, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I definitely. Well, first of all, you know, the hatred and disdain for people so much that you would destroy gigantic numbers of people, even if you could be protected, is rather insane. It's psychotic. And but I will say that some people believe that there is a depopulation effort by a very small group of people, and that they are somewhat protected from the problems with the nuclear war, although I really doubt it, since there is something called the nuclear winter. But I'm just amazed at their enthusiasm. Even Putin is now getting, let's get these things that now the United States won't be able to use their defensive weapons anymore and won't be able to shoot down our missiles. So we'll have them. And so now we'll have responding to the gigantic amount of money that Trump wants to put into the military. And he was talking originally, although he backed down, thank goodness, of expanding our nuclear arsenal tenfold, which I thought was really amazing. Like, so maybe we're going to blow up Jupiter and Mars and Venus and throw in Neptune if we can. I mean, why not get some more weapons? Of course, we'd have to carry them out there too. So I don't know. That's another expenditure. It's just, I don't know. It's strange.
It all fits in with a materialistic view of the world. And by that, I mean the riches of the world, power. And it's so sad to see a lot of so-called religious people buying into this approach to life. Even though they claim to be spiritual, no, they're in the throes of materialistic thinking. I think a truly spiritual person will want peace, cherish peace and tranquility and equality and freedom and all those things that you talk about in your show. And so the discussion could lead into what do we believe the word religion and churches mean. But we won't go there today.
I want to go there a slight bit in saying that I believe that conscience, that is caring for other people and trying to do the right thing, is a reflection of higher consciousness,
right,
which I call the divine presence. People call it by many names. I believe that Jesus called it the kingdom of God in the New Testament, sometimes somewhat misinterpreted as to the many levels of that particular idea of the kingdom of God. But so what I see here is many people who identify themselves with certain religious convictions, they seemingly don't mind this, you know, that a great number of the world, I mean, maybe the majority of the world, either gets destroyed in some kind of holocaust or they're tortured forever somewhere. So yeah. We're supposed to love our enemies. We're supposed to love our neighbors, and so we want to. I believe that God, if He wants such things, would stretch them out to handling all kinds of people, and there would be forgiveness and love involved in that situation, no matter where they were. Which is not to say they wouldn't suffer the consequences of some of the things they did, but would they suffer them in such a consequential and eternal way? So that is a question.
Well, you know, being the testosterone man that I am, I always think of sexual analogies, and this is clean. Don't have a cow.
I won't. I'm trying not to. Go ahead.
We often hear sex is only and romantic love is only for mature people. In the hands of the immature and the selfish, it becomes an instrument of abuse and power and disrespect. And we see that in the media all the time. So the same analogy applies here, in my opinion. Religion, spirituality is only for mature people. People who are not mature will use religion and dogma as a sword to strike other people. And the same as sex. And so these big issues in our lives, spirituality, sex, power, can be abused by those who are not mature enough to wield them.
Well, you know, there's several kinds of elitism. One of the that makes you better than everyone else or than a large number of people, one of them is wealth and power. But the other is being attached to some type of organization or belief system that's going to make you superior to everybody else.
Exactly.
And therefore protected from the damage of not believing in those things. And that's, you know, I spent maybe, I don't know, 5-7 years studying cults. And the main thing about a cult is that there is hidden in the cult what you call sort of a phobic trigger. So that in certain cases, like if you think a certain way or you expose yourself to certain information, you're putting your soul, your life, or your relationship to your community in danger. And so this is the problem if you're not really understanding that most religions at their core, what I call core spirituality, believed in what Jesus said. You know, there's two commandments. You can boil them all down to two. Love the neighbor as thyself and love the Lord thy God. And that's a very simple thing to do in a sense. But much of the world has forgotten that. And I don't care what you call yourself as a religious person. there are people in all these religions that do believe in that and actually act accordingly. But there are others who have taken certain belief systems and have decided that they're somehow better than other people.
Well, that's you're saying the same thing in different language. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was hoping that maybe today you'd take the time to update our listeners with some wisdom from your incredibly large cachet of information about true health.
Well, sure. And, you know, a segue here. It turns out that in health, in the healthcare system, we have the same thing. You know, mainstream healthcare. It's all about power and control and profits. And so you have to dig. So this is why I blogged about artificial sweeteners this week. Because for decades, I've been fighting with the establishment doctors and nutritionists who would berate me for me saying artificial sweeteners are toxic and they lead to obesity and diabetes paradoxically.
Right.
And so I tell you, I got scars to show you how I got attacked for saying those things decades ago. Now, why did I say them? Because they've been in the medical literature that long, that artificial sweeteners, which we got from pesticides and leftover nerve gas from the big wars, are toxic to the cell membrane and the liver and the whole body. But I focus on the cell membrane of every cell of the body and the liver, because that's where most of the damage is done to create metabolic problems, obesity and diabetes problems. And so, sure enough, a huge article came out again last week reiterating what I just told you. Artificial sweeteners promote obesity and diabetes because they mess your metabolism in the cell membrane of all cells, in the liver and the gut flora. The gut flora is beat up by artificial sweeteners as it is by any toxic artificial chemical. And that impacts the liver where we make and process a lot of sugar. And so beware. You know,
are you coming out against Diet Cola?
Absolutely. Yes.
Are you saying that Diet Cola can actually make you fat and sick?
Exactly. Now, you ever seen a thin person walking around drinking Diet Coke? You ever seen that? No. Well, I'm being facetious here, but yeah, most people walking around with a big cup from 7-Eleven, what do they look like? You know, so listen, it's all about marketing. It's all about making money, and the healthcare system, who has fought me for decades on this, should be ashamed of themselves. And you know, I have so vividly in my mind having these discussions with nutritionists, with PhD researchers into medicine, with MDs, and being berated because I would say things like what I'm saying now, but it's totally vindicated by science. However, it hasn't percolated down to mainstream people, has it? No, because you still see people drinking Diet Coke by the gallons.
Yeah, that is, it's a strange thing. And you know, it seems like it's as addictive as anything, because people who drink it, I definitely think that addiction plays a huge role in our attempts to control our diet, and it's a constant struggle for me.
Yeah, that's
well.
Because,
go ahead.
That's because of artificial sweeteners' effect on the gut flora, which the gut bacteria will send messages to the brain, saying "keep feeding me this stuff." The artificial sweeteners also have an effect on the brain itself. So when you use the word addiction, you're absolutely right. It is an addiction.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to play a little promo for you, doctor, so that and then we're moving towards the end of the show. And I want to thank you for, you know, contributing today. I always find it really fascinating what you say. So here's C10.
Are you confused about so much information on health issues? Do you find it hard to trust the sources of conflicting advice? Try Dr. Rodier's newsletters and blogs based on the latest information published in the best medical and nutritional journals. There is no charge for subscribing. Just log on to HugoRodier.com. That's HugoRodier.com to do so or to download Dr. Rodier's latest publications.
Any final words, Doctor?
No, thank you for having me, and thank you for that promo, and I hope people take advantage of all that information.
Well, thank you, too. And also thanks to Don Newsom for his continual help on overseeing our programs. Thanks a lot, Don. And to his brother, Doug, for helping us see the multiple advantages of working with BBS Radio. BBS Radio is a fantastic place for all kinds of information that you do not find in major media. So I suggest that you try it out. Of course, we also thank Hassan Khan for his help in all things related to New Galaxy Enterprises. Hassan has stuck with me for a long, long time as we move forward in trying to get our message out. Another person I want to thank is Lynn, the Mystic Healer, for her amazing contributions to the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment. She's like directing our membership services right now at the very beginning. And Andy Miller is another person I want to thank, who is helping the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment with their infrastructure. He's an IT person, he's a social activist, and he's somebody who really is interested in helping the world. So we're going to go out with an extraordinary version of Unchained Melody by the amazing Patricia Welch, and we're going to have a little goodbye message. And so for now, good luck and keep cosmic.
Thanks for joining Dr. Rodier and I on Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition. As we go about developing our new organization, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment, we hope you will consider the importance of taking part in the electoral processes of your government and asserting the rights you have to vote for the companies you respect and love by casting your ballot as a shareholder or as a consumer with what you buy. We hope soon to make this possible through a social network responsive to your needs to dialogue about your rights as a citizen, but also to be able to effectively act in concert with like-minded colleagues to find representatives of government and business executives who will hear your voice and appreciate your message. See you soon.
wait for me.